Did you ever hear of anything so foolish? A man building a boat where there wasn't any water. That would be foolish, boys and girls, except for one thing. The man who built that first boat did it because God told him to. And doing what God tells us to do is never foolish, even though some people think it is. It was way, way back, not long after God had put Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, that there was a man named Noah. He believed in God and loved him and served him. But all around Noah there were wicked people. God saw how sinful they were and he said, I will destroy man from the face of the earth. That meant everyone but Noah, who was a good man that walked with God. So God told Noah he was going to destroy the whole earth by a flood. And he said, Noah, build an ark, build a big boat, and this is the way to make it, and this is what to put in it. And Noah, this is why you should do all this. Because I'm going to bring a great flood on the earth and everybody will be drowned, but you'll be safe, Noah, you and your family, in the ark. Do you know that it took Noah more than 100 years to build that big boat? And the people thought he was crazy. They wouldn't listen to him. When he told them about the flood that was coming, they just laughed and laughed. But Noah went right on building, and when he was 600 years old, the flood came. Noah and his family went into the ark and brought with them all the animals God had told them to bring. And God closed the door. Then the rain came down day and night. The waters covered the earth and rose higher and higher. And the people were afraid. They screamed for help and they tried to get into the ark. But the door was locked shut. God himself had closed it and nobody could open it. So they ran to the hills and climbed as high as they could, but there was no way of escape. It rained and rained for 40 days and nights until the hills and even the mountains were all covered with water. And all of the people and all living things on the face of the earth were drowned. Only Noah and his family and the animals he had in the ark were saved because Noah believed God and obeyed him. After the waters dried up, Noah and his family and all the living creatures with him in the ark went out onto dry land. And Noah built an altar and worshipped God, and then God made a promise to Noah that he would never again destroy the earth by a flood. And he told Noah that the rainbow would always be a reminder of his promise. And so, boys and girls, whenever you see a rainbow in the sky, remember that it's there to remind us of God's wonderful promise that the earth will never again be destroyed by a flood. And when you see that rainbow, just remember all that God did for Noah. Why? Because Noah obeyed him and did what God wanted him to do. Long time ago, when the Israelites were slaves in Egypt, a very wicked king ruled over the land. And the king, they called him Pharaoh, was afraid that the Israelites were getting too strong. You see, there were so many of these slaves that Pharaoh thought it would be hard to keep them in slavery. He feared that someday they would rise up and fight with their masters and gain their freedom. And of course, he didn't want that. So he made them work so hard they wouldn't have time to even think about trying to escape. And he put big, strong bosses over them who made them work harder and harder. And no matter what the Pharaoh did, the people of Israel got stronger and stronger because God was with them. Finally, Pharaoh decided that something very terrible had to be done. And do you know what that wicked old king did? He gave orders that every boy baby born to an Israelite must be thrown into the river. Now, before long, a wonderful baby boy was born to a slave named Amram. Of course, his parents loved him just as much as your parents love you, and they didn't want him to die. So, at the risk of their own lives, they kept him hidden for 3 months. But finally, they realized they couldn't hide him any longer, so his mother made a little cradle for him out of bulrushes and closed up the cracks with pitch and slime so it would keep out water. And then, do you know what she did? She put the baby Moses into it, took it down to the river and hid it there among the tall weeds. And Moses' sister stood by and watched to see what would happen. Before long, the Pharaoh's very own daughter came down to the river to wash herself. And when she saw the little cradle, she sent one of her servants to get it. You can just imagine how scared Moses' sister was. She didn't know what would happen to the baby. She was just certain he would be killed. But do you know, boys and girls, God was watching over that baby. And the minute the princess saw him, she loved him. She had a mother's heart, and it didn't matter to her that Moses was a slave baby. And just then Moses' sister came running up to the princess and offered to get a nurse for the baby, one of the slave women. The princess quickly agreed, and can you guess who became Moses' nurse? Can you? That's right. His very own mother. Oh, how glad she must have been. Do you know how wonderful God was to this slave family? The baby's life was saved, and God permitted his own mother to raise him and be paid for it, too. And so Moses, a slave child, was raised in the beautiful Egyptian palace, all because God had watched over him and saved his life in such a wonderful way.
Hi, boys and girls. Here's Uncle Ben with a story for you. Say, did you ever have something extra special that you liked real well? Something that the other boys and girls in your neighborhood didn't have, eh? Did you? Oh, sure. Well, this is the story of a boy, and his name was Joseph, who had a beautiful, beautiful coat, a coat of many colors. It was a present from his father, who loved him more than any of the other children of the family, and that's why it meant so much to him, of course. It reminded him of his father's love. But it made his brothers jealous and very angry, and they became even angrier when Joseph told them his dreams, because in his dreams his brothers and even his parents were made to bow down to him. So his wicked, jealous brothers plotted to kill him. And one day, while they were tending their sheep, they saw Joseph coming toward them, and one of them said,
"Look, there comes that dreamer. Now's our chance to get rid of him."
"Yeah, let's throw him into a pit."
"Sure, and say a wild beast killed him. We'll see what'll become of his dreams. Isn't that right, Reuben?"
"Wait, my brothers. Let's not kill him."
"What?"
"That's right. Let's shed no blood. Wouldn't it be better just to throw him into this pit? There's no water in it."
"Sure, that's it. He'll soon die of thirst and hunger, and no one can blame us." So the brothers agreed. They took this beautiful coat from him and pushed him into the pit. And then they sat down to eat, not caring how hungry or thirsty Joseph might be. But suddenly they saw a company of traders approaching. And Judah, the oldest brother, had an idea. And he said,
"What good will it do to kill our brother? I have a better plan."
"Yeah, sell him to these traders."
"You come by your wisdom early, my brother."
So Joseph was sold for 20 pieces of silver and taken into Egypt. And then the wicked brothers killed a goat and spilled its blood on Joseph's beautiful coat. You know why they did it, don't you? Yeah, that's right. To make their father believe that Joseph had been killed by a wild beast. Of course, when Jacob saw the coat, he was very sad and he wept. He was sure his favorite son was dead. How could he know that Joseph had been sold to Potiphar, the captain of Pharaoh's guard, and that he was still alive in Egypt? Now, Joseph was a boy who believed that God can never make a mistake. He was certain that all these things had been allowed to happen to him for some good reason. But it took many long years for him to find out what that reason was. At first, Joseph was well liked by Potiphar, his master, but he was accused of doing something he didn't do and was thrown into prison, where he stayed for a long, long time. But one day he was called out of prison to interpret a dream that Pharaoh had. God showed Joseph the meaning of the dream, and Joseph told it to Pharaoh, and Pharaoh was so glad that he made Joseph a ruler in the land, next highest to himself. That's how God rewarded Joseph for his faithfulness and trust. Before long, a famine came into the land of Canaan, and Joseph's brothers came to Egypt to get food. Who do you suppose gave it to him? Huh? Joseph, of course. But the brothers didn't know it was Joseph until he surprised them by saying, "I am Joseph. Is my father still alive? Come near. I am Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt." Yes. And then the brothers knew that Joseph's dream had come true, and they were bowing down to him just as he said they would. They were afraid and expected to be punished, but Joseph forgave them. Yes, yes.
"Don't be sad, my brothers, and don't scold yourselves. It wasn't really you who sent me into Egypt. It was God. It was his way of keeping us from starving. You see, now I am here in charge of Egypt's food, and I can feed all of you and myself and my family too."
Yes, and then Joseph sent for his father, and all of Joseph's family came to live in Egypt, where they were cared for the rest of their days. And that's the story of the slave boy who became a prince.
Did you ever hear of anyone fighting a battle with such strange weapons as lamps and pitchers? We certainly wouldn't go to war with them today. And even way back hundreds and hundreds of years ago, they were not considered anything to fight a war with. But the man who used them was a very unusual man, and he did it for a very good reason. The man's name was Gideon. God had chosen him to lead his people Israel into battle against the Midianites. Now, Gideon had more than 30,000 soldiers ready to fight for him. But God said, "Gideon, that's too many. If you win the victory with a big army, you'll feel you did it yourself. I want you to know that I, your God, am saving you." So Gideon obeyed God and sent home all the men of his army who were afraid to go into battle. And then he had 10,000 left. But God said, "That's still too many, Gideon." And God gave the soldiers another test. And then there were only 300 left. That's not a big army for any battle, is it? Especially when the enemy has thousands and thousands of warriors. But God promised Gideon the victory, even with such a small band of soldiers. So Gideon prepared for battle. He gave each of his men three of the strangest weapons you ever saw: a trumpet, a lamp, and a pitcher. And then he divided the army into three companies of 100 soldiers each. He told them what to do and sent them to surround the enemy's camp on all sides. And when Gideon gave the signal, all of his men blew their trumpets, broke their pitchers with a loud bang, and held their lamps up high. And they all shouted, "The sword of the Lord and of Gideon!" The enemy was taken by surprise. They thought they were surrounded by a great army, and they scattered and ran for their lives. So God gave Gideon a great victory that day, and all because Gideon had obeyed him and was willing to try what seemed impossible. Now, you and I won't have to fight great armies like Gideon did, but we have a battle to fight every day that's more impossible to win. It's against Satan. And he's more powerful than any army Gideon ever faced. With us, it is impossible. But with God, all things are possible. So, boys and girls, when Satan tries to get you to sin against the Lord, remember that it's not your battle, but God's. He'll give you the victory if you'll trust him for it and let him fight for you.
Do you think you're too small or too young to work for God? Well, if you listen very carefully to the story I'm going to tell, you'll find out that God can use even boys and girls to do wonderful things for him. This story is about a shepherd boy who saved a kingdom. And it was at a time when Israel and the Philistines were at war. Now, the Philistines had a great giant fighting for them. His name was Goliath, and he was so big and terrible that Israel's bravest soldiers were afraid of him. He came out and stood in front of the armies of Israel and cried out,
"Choose a man to come and fight me. If he kills me, we'll be your servants. But if I kill him, then you'll be our servants. I defy the armies of Israel. Give me a man that we may fight together."
But Goliath looked so big and so strong that no one dared to go out to fight him. And then a small shepherd boy came to the battlefront just to bring food to his older brothers who were fighting in Israel's army. And when David, that was the shepherd's boy's name, and when David heard Goliath, he said, "Who is this heathen Philistine that he should talk this way to the armies of the living God?" So David went to Saul, king of Israel, and he said, "O king, don't let your men be afraid of the giant. I will go out and fight him."
You, David? Why, you're but a boy, and he's been a man of war ever since he was young. You can't fight him."
Yeah, but David was trusting God to protect him and to give him victory over the terrible giant, and he begged so hard to go that the king finally said,
"All right, David, you go and fight Goliath, and the Lord be with you."
Now, everyone thought David was sure to be killed. Yes, he didn't wear any armor to protect him. He didn't even have a spear or a sword to fight with. All he had was a slingshot and 5 stones that he picked up in the brook. Just think, whoosh, a slingshot against a man like Goliath, who had heavy armor and a shield to protect him. But one thing Goliath didn't have, he didn't have God to fight for him. No, and David did. And so this brave little shepherd boy who trusted God rushed out to fight the giant Goliath. Now Goliath felt very insulted that Israel would send a boy to fight him. And he cried out in a big scary voice,
"Am I a dog that you, a boy, should come to fight me? Why, I'll give your flesh to the birds and to the beasts of the field." "Goliath, you come against me with a spear and a sword, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts."
Yes, and he took his sling, and he slung a stone at Goliath. And do you know, God sent that stone right straight through into Goliath's forehead, and he fell to earth with a crash, and David rushed over to him, took Goliath's own sword, and cut off his head. The Philistines were so frightened when they saw their great giant Goliath dead that they started to run. And the armies of Israel chased them and won a great victory. All because a shepherd boy trusted God, and God used him to save a kingdom.
Boys and girls, I'm going to tell you a story about a great man who needed God. His name was Naaman. He was a captain in the king's army in the land of Syria, and there was no braver man in all that kingdom. He had won many battles and was one of the king's favorite soldiers. But do you know? There was something that made Naaman very unhappy. Can you guess what it was? Naaman was a leper. And that means he had a terrible disease that could not be healed, a disease that would eat away his hands and his feet and even his face until he died. Now, there was in the captain's home a little slave girl who had been taken prisoner in Israel and carried off to Syria. She saw how unhappy her master was, and she told her mistress about a man of God who could heal the great captain. Well, sir, it didn't take long for the news to get around to Naaman. And when the king heard about it, he gave Naaman a letter to take to the king of Israel. And all kinds of wonderful presents, too. Silver and gold and beautiful clothes. So Naaman brought the letter in the presence to Israel's king, and when the king read the letter, he exclaimed,
"Why, who does that Syrian king think I am, God? I can't heal leprosy. Nobody can."
It wasn't long before Elisha, the man of God, heard about the letter, and he sent word to the king of Israel to have Naaman come to him. Naaman was so anxious to be made well that he came to Elisha as fast as he could. And there he was, chariot and horses and all, right outside Elisha's door. Of course, he expected Elisha to come out and treat him like the great man he was. But not Elisha. He sent one of his servants out with a message telling Naaman to go to the River Jordan and wash himself 7 times. That made Naaman so angry, he just started up his horses and was ready to go back home.
"Doesn't that prophet know who I am? Why, I thought he'd come out and perform a great miracle for everybody to see, and all he does is send his servant. Besides, why should I wash in that muddy old Jordan? Don't we have better rivers than that in our own land?"
And he started to go home. But his servants talked to him and begged him to do what the prophet had commanded. So finally, Naaman agreed. He knew that he couldn't heal himself, and he knew nobody else could help him. The only one who could was God. Naaman became as humble as a little child, and he did what God had commanded through his servant Elisha. He dipped himself in the River Jordan 7 times. And do you know what happened? The leprosy disappeared just like that. Now, wasn't that a wonderful story, boys and girls? And don't forget who it was that God used to save Naaman's life. Not only his faithful servant Elisha, but a little girl, too. A little girl who loved God enough to tell others what he could do for them. Once in faraway Babylon, there were 3 Hebrew boys, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They had been carried there as prisoners and made servants in the king's palace, and they served so faithfully and well that they were soon given very high positions. But one day these captive boys had to make a very hard decision. The king had made a great statue of himself and commanded everyone to worship it. And anyone who refused was to be burned to death in a fiery furnace. Because the Hebrew boys believed in one true God, they knew they couldn't worship the image. But certainly they didn't want to be burned either. What would you have done? I'll tell you what they did. They refused to bow to the statue. And of course there was someone around to tattle to the king about it. Some of the Chaldeans, who were jealous of the Hebrew captives, went straight to Nebuchadnezzar and said, "Thou, O king, hast commanded every man to fall down and worship the golden image, and anyone who refuses is to be thrown into the burning fiery furnace. Hear us, O king. There are certain Jews who have not bowed to your image." Then the king was very angry, and he commanded,
"Bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego to me."
And when the 3 captives were brought before the king, he said,
"Is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not worship the gold?
Our God is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace. We will not serve your God. And we will not worship your golden image." This made Nebuchadnezzar so angry that he cried out in a rage,
"Make the furnace 7 times hotter. Bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and throw them into it."
Say, boys and girls, how would you feel if you knew you were going to be thrown into a burning furnace? Would you be afraid? Maybe these boys were too. But they still believed God could save them. And even if he thought it better for them to die in the furnace, they would obey him and not the wicked king.
So they were tied up, thrown into the furnace, and do you know, the fire was so hot that the strong men who carried them were burned to death. And of course everyone thought that was the end of the disobedient captives. But something very strange and wonderful happened. And the king cried out,
"Didn't we throw three men into the furnace? And weren't they tied so they couldn't walk? How is it then that I see four men, and they're not tied? They're walking. And oh, the fourth one looks like the Son of God."
So the king called the Hebrew captives out of the furnace. Not one of them had been hurt. And Nebuchadnezzar knew that their God had saved them. And he commanded,
"Every people, nation, and language which speak anything against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall die. There is no other God like their God."
And so, because three captive boys who loved the true God and would not turn from him even though they might die, God's name was honored. And these faithful boys were promoted to high positions in the land. Say, what would you do if you heard this terrible noise right beside you? Would you be afraid? I guess we'd all be afraid if we got very close to hungry lions. Even when we see them in a cage at the zoo, it almost makes us shiver to hear them roar. Well, I'm going to tell you about a young man who wasn't afraid of lions, even when he was thrown right into the cage with them. And I'll tell you why he was so brave. This man's name was Daniel. He lived a long, long time ago in the land of Judah. And while he was still a boy, an enemy nation came and conquered the kingdom in which he lived. And he was carried away to Babylon as a prisoner. And there he was taken into the king's palace to be one of his servants. God gave Daniel great wisdom, and because of this, he was given a high, high position in the land. This made the princes very jealous, and they began scheming to see how they could get rid of Daniel. So they thought of a plan and told it to the king.
"Hear, O king, all the presidents and princes have made a law that if anyone should pray to any god but you, they should be thrown to the lions."
The king signed the decree. That was what the wicked princes wanted. And it became law. Daniel knew that the law was signed, but he still prayed to his god. Of course, the jealous princes told the king. Now the king loved Daniel, and he was sorry he had signed the law. And he tried to save Daniel's life. But he had given his word, and the law couldn't be changed. So he ordered Daniel to be thrown into the lion's den. And the king was very sad as he walked toward the lion's den with Daniel, and he wished he could save him, but there was nothing he could do. The law couldn't be broken. And so with the hungry lions roaring eagerly for their prey, Daniel was thrown right into the cage with them. And they roared and roared. And the king spoke to Daniel and said, "Thy God, whom thou servest continually, he will deliver thee." Daniel knew this was true, and he wasn't afraid. He believed God could save him, even from the mouths of hungry lions. And then the king commanded that a stone be rolled into place to close up the mouth of the den, and he left Daniel to be eaten by the hungry lions. But the king was very upset. He couldn't eat, he couldn't sleep. Very early the next morning, he hurried to the lion's den, and he was very sad, for he was sure that by this time, Daniel was dead. And he cried out in a sad voice, "Daniel! Oh, Daniel, is thy God able to deliver thee from the lions?" He waited. His heart skipped a beat. He strained his ears to hear. And then,
"O king, live forever. My God sent an angel to shut the lions' mouths, and they haven't hurt me, because I was innocent before God and before thee."
Oh, the king was so glad he had Daniel taken out of the lion's den immediately. Daniel wasn't hurt at all because he believed in his God.
And the king ordered that the wicked princes who had tried to kill Daniel be thrown to the lion. And they were killed by the hungry beasts even before they touched the bottom of the den. And then the king made a decree that everyone in his kingdom should worship Daniel's God, because he is the true and living God. And Daniel was a favorite of the king ever after. Story of a man who disobeyed God and got into all kinds of trouble. His name was Jonah, and God said to him, Jonah, you go to Nineveh, and Jonah, you preach for me there. But Jonah wouldn't go to Nineveh. He found a ship sailing to Tarshish instead, and he got on board hoping he could get away from God. But God sent a great storm into the sea. The sailors were afraid the ship would sink. Every one of them prayed to his God. And then they threw some of the cargo overboard to keep the ship from going down. And where do you suppose Jonah was? And what do you think he was doing? Jonah was down in the ship, sleeping. The shipmaster came and cried out to Jonah, "Wake up, you sleeper! Wake up and pray if you think your God cares for us." The sailors tried to find out the reason for the storm, and it seemed that Jonah was the cause of it. So they began to ask him questions. Why has this trouble come upon us? What work do you do? Where do you come from? Who are your people? I am Jonah, a Hebrew. I fear the Lord, the God of heaven, which made the sea and the dry land. Oh, Jonah, why have you done this? You told us yourself that you ran away from God, but why, Jonah, why?
I know, it's all my fault. So I'll tell you what to do. Take me and throw me into the sea, and the storm will be over. But the men didn't want to do it, so they rowed harder and harder to see if they couldn't reach land. But it wasn't any use. They soon realized there was nothing else to do but to throw Jonah overboard. And when they did, the storm stopped immediately. But poor Jonah. Can you guess what happened to him? Quick as a flash, a giant fish that God had prepared opened its big old jaws and swallowed him up. What would you do if such a thing happened to you? I think you'd do just what Jonah did. You'd pray, and you'd pray hard. Jonah prayed, and he told God how sorry he was for disobeying him. God heard his prayer and spoke to the fish. And before he knew it, Jonah was out of the fish and on dry land. And then God said again, Jonah, go to Nineveh. And Jonah, preach for me there. This time Jonah obeyed. He had learned his lesson. From now on, he was going to do what God asked him to do. Now, Nineveh was a very wicked city, and God had planned to destroy it. But when Jonah preached, the people believed God and turned from their sin and were saved. When people who say they love God do what he asks them to do, then God is able to use them. He makes them a wonderful blessing to others. Don't you want to be the kind of boy or girl that's obedient to God? The kind that God can use to bring his message of love to others? Heard the story of the miracle star that led the wise men to the miracle baby in Bethlehem? The Lord Jesus Christ was that wonderful baby. He was different from any child that has ever been born because, you see, he was not only a human being like you and me, he was also God. He had been promised to the world for thousands of years, and finally he came. The shepherds went to see him the very night he was born. But there were wise men from the east who came to see him later. And when they came to Jerusalem, they said, "Where is he that is born king of the Jews? Yes, where is he? We have seen his star in the east, and we have come here to worship him.
Ah, but when the wicked old King Herod heard about this, he was very upset. And he asked the chief priests and scribes where Jesus was to be born, and they told him in Bethlehem of Judea. They had read it in God's word many times. Then Herod called the wise men to him and asked them when the star had appeared. And then he said,
"Go and search for the child. And when you find him, let me know so I can go and worship him too."
Now, Herod didn't really want to worship the Lord Jesus. He only wanted to find out where he was so he could kill him. And when Herod was through talking to the wise men, they started on their journey to find the miracle baby. When they looked up into the heavens, there was the miracle star. It began to move, and they followed it. On and on it went, and on they followed, until suddenly it stopped right over the place where the young child was. When the wise men saw that, they were overjoyed because they knew that their long search was over. And they went into the house the star had led them to and found the miracle baby and his mother Mary. And they fell down and worshiped the child because they knew he was Jesus, the very Son of God. And they gave him wonderful presents, gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And when they had finished, they were ready to start back home. But God warned them in a dream that they should not go back the same way they had come, because they would meet Herod and would have to tell him where Jesus was. And all Herod wanted to do was to kill Jesus. So the wise men returned home by a different way. And that, boys and girls, is the story of the miracle star that led the wise men to the miracle baby who grew up to die on the cross as the Savior of the world. The Lord Jesus Christ went, he was followed by big crowds, and this day was the same. Thousands of people crowding around him because they had seen him do such wonderful things. Things that no one else had ever been able to do, but he could do because he was God. He could heal the sick, make the lame walk, and the blind see. The people just couldn't believe their eyes, and they followed him whenever they could, wondering what wonderful thing he would do next. Now, this was a day that was extra special in the life of the little boy that our story is about. Many other people would remember it, too, but he would remember it most of all. Now, maybe he was small, and maybe none of the thousands of people noticed him very much, but the Lord did, and he chose this little boy out of all the others to help him with a miracle. Just think, wouldn't you have liked to be that boy and have that great honor? Listen now, and I'll tell you what the Lord did. When he saw all the people in front of him, he knew they were hungry and he wanted to feed them, but there was no food around, at least not very much. Andrew, one of Jesus' disciples, spoke up and said, "There's a little boy here, Master, who has 5 loaves of bread and 2 small fishes, but that's so little there's hardly any use talking about it. One small boy's lunch certainly can't feed all these people." But Andrew and all the other people there that day were to see a very wonderful miracle again. I wonder how the little boy felt when the Lord Jesus took his lunch. Do you suppose he said to himself, "Well, now what do I do? Doesn't he know that's all I have to eat?" Or do you think he was very glad about it and thought, "It's all the lunch I have, but if Jesus wants it, I'm happy to let him have it." I'm sure I don't know that little boy's feelings when he gave his lunch away, but I'm sure of this, boys and girls. There wasn't a happier boy in the world when he saw what Jesus did with it. The Lord took those 5 little loaves and the 2 fishes and thanked God for them, and then he had his disciples give them to the crowd to eat. And do you know? Those few little pieces of bread and those tiny fishes were enough to feed 5,000 people. and there was more left over when they were through than there had been to start with. Of course, only the Lord Jesus Christ, the Son of God, could perform a miracle like that. And I'm certain that the boy the Lord used to help him with the miracle never got tired of telling about it. I think I can hear him talking about it everywhere he went. Yeah, and it was my lunch he used. Just think of it. My lunch. Say, hear that? A sheep. Remember all the nursery rhymes you learned about sheep when you were real small? Mary had a little lamb, baa, baa, black sheep. Oh, yes, and the one you know best of all, little Bo Peep has lost her sheep and can't tell where to find them. Well, you can say that one in your sleep, can't you? But do you know the Bible story about lost sheep? There is one, you know. It's about one little sheep that wandered away from the others. And when the shepherds came to count his sheep, he was so surprised he counted once. 97, 98, 99, and, well, there should have been 100, but there weren't. Just 99, or else he'd counted wrong, so he counted all over again, and he ended up with 97, 98, and 99 again. Now, he knew there was something wrong. There should be 100, and one was gone. One sheep was missing, lost out in the mountains somewhere. Do you suppose it mattered to the shepherd? Well, I just guess it did. He loved that sheep just as much as he loved all the others. And he just couldn't rest until he found it and brought it back to the fold. So he left the 99 sheep behind, and he went out to look for the one little sheep that was lost. Well, it wasn't easy to find just one little old sheep. And the shepherd hunted and hunted. I'm sure he got hungry and thirsty and so very, very tired, but he wouldn't give up. He was going to find that sheep if it took him forever. And then... It was. He could hardly believe it. There was that little lost sheep at last. Why, that shepherd was so happy he could hardly keep from shouting. And what do you suppose he did? He picked up that little fellow, threw him on his shoulders, and carried him all the way back home. And when he got back, he called his friends and neighbors and exclaimed, "Listen, everybody, remember my little sheep that was lost? Well, I have good news for you, and I want you to be glad with me because I've found him. I've found him." Now, wasn't that a happy ending for a story? The shepherd was happy, and his friends were happy, too. And I guess we don't have to wonder if the lost sheep was happy, do we?
There have not always been stars, you know, or birds, or flowers, or trees, or people. But always, since the beginning, there has been God. God is good. So the things he thought of to make were good. He thought of sunlight. And he made the sun. He thought of twinkling stars and a white bright moon. And he made the twinkling stars and white bright moon. And God saw that they were good. God thought of making boys and girls and mothers and fathers. But before he made them, he made sand and grass for them to walk upon. He made water for them to drink and play with and bathe in. He made plants from which they could get food to eat. God saw the empty air and thought of birds flying and singing. God made birds. He saw the river and ocean water and thought of fish to swim in the water. Then God made fish. As God watched the plants which he had made grow big enough to make food, he knew it was time to make animals. Animals must have food to eat. Some of the animals were pretty to look at, like a deer. Some of them were strong enough for hard work, like the donkey. Some were tiny workers, like the worms which dig in the gardens. When God had finished making the animals, he knew at last that he could make a man and a woman. God made the man like himself. From the man, God made the woman. And God saw everything that he had made, and it was very good. Please clasp one of your hands around your arm. What you are feeling is smooth, clean skin with a hard, sturdy bone underneath. Now clench your fist and feel the tightness of muscles. If I asked you to, you would clasp my arm. My arm is smooth and clean. It is a well arm. You would not have wanted to clasp the arm of Naaman, for the skin on Naaman's body was sick with sores of leprosy. No one touched him, for he was called unclean. Now there was a little girl from the land of Israel. She was a worker, a servant to Naaman's wife. She knew of a man who could make sick skin well, smooth and clean. She said to Naaman's wife, "I wish that your husband Naaman were with the man I know. The man I know would make Naaman well." Voices whispered, pens wrote words, horses' hooves clattered, gold jingled, questions were asked. Naaman made a journey. The man who was known by the little girl who worked for Naaman's wife sent someone with running feet to tell Naaman how to get well. "Go to the Jordan River," he said. "Go down and up and wash yourself 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times in the river known as the Jordan." When Naaman dipped himself 7 times in the water of the Jordan, Naaman became well. His skin became clean and smooth. Horses' hooves clattered, gold jingled. Naaman was going home. "What is her name?" someone called. "The girl who told you where to get well." Naaman frowned as he thought to himself, "I wonder, what is her name?" There is a lad here who has a lunch. A lunch? One lunch? Yes, one lunch. And there they are. Look at them. Look at those hungry, tired, waiting people. Fat people, thin people, people with small, squinty eyes, and people with pointed noses, and people with curved up and over eyebrows, and people with split fingernails and people with rough elbows. People. These hungry, tired people had been with Jesus all day long. Now it was time to eat. And there was a lad among those people who had a lunch. Andrew, Jesus' helper, said, "But what is one lunch among so many people? What is one lunch to the Son of God, who really owns everything?" Jesus did not feed the people by himself. He asked for help. He took the lunch of 5 loaves of bread, about the size of hamburger buns, and 2 small fish, and used it to feed the people. Jesus wanted to be helped. Elbows punched and pushed and pulled, sandaled feet scraped a path, a slow, heavy, zigzag path through the town of Jericho. Jesus was coming, and all the people wanted to see Jesus. Zacchaeus was part of the punching, pushing, pulling, scraping crowd until Zacchaeus found a tree. His sandals scraped the smooth white bark of the sycamore tree. He did not see the scraping or the pushing, pulling crowd down below. He was a short man, but he was climbing up high to a sturdy branch, a sycamore branch, from which he could look down to see Jesus. Jesus had to look up. Zacchaeus was so high. Jesus had to look up. And he said, "Come down. Come down, Zacchaeus, and busy yourself. I shall stay at your house today." Backing away, 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 the crowd of people got out of the way for Zacchaeus with his new friend, Jesus. I tried to put a smell on this record. I tried and tried, but I couldn't. I wanted to tell you a story that has such a sweet smell in it. It would be ever so much better if you could smell the smell, but... Oh, no, don't take the record off. I know, I tried everything. You must just think the smell when I speak of it. Mary could not wait for a birthday or a special day of any kind. To her, this day was special. This moment was most important. Jesus was here, in her house, eating dinner at her table. She arose and left the table. Her feet carried her swiftly to the room where there was a chest in which she kept a special bottle of costly ointment of pure nard. Her breath came quick and fast as she smiled to herself. Now is the time for giving. Now is the time for love. Not tomorrow, not a special holiday. Now. While she was thinking these things, Mary's hands were deftly smoothing the ointment onto Jesus' feet. They were loosing her hair and letting it fall as if for a towel to wipe the feet of her teacher, her friend, Jesus. Mary had given her gift so quickly, so quietly, that she had scarcely been missed at the dinner table. Not until the smell, the sweet,
fragrant smell of the ointment had escaped the bottle and floated by the noses of the people at table. Not until then did anyone speak of Mary's gift. Listen carefully. Many voices were speaking, and I shall speak quickly so that you may hear the way their sounds filled the air above the road leading into Jerusalem. Listen. He says he is the Son of God. Did you hear him say that? Were you there when he told that man to take up his own bed and walk? You know, that crippled man. He told him to carry his own bed. He says to go and do a kind thing for someone whom you do not love. He says not to wait to do good. He says so many things I do not understand. The Son of God says, go. But to the children, he said, did you not hear him say? He said, come to me. To some, go. To others, come. He is coming. He is coming this way, today. I think I shall burst. I think I must sing. Sing to the man who says, do not wait. Do not wait to make this day your own special day. Do not wait to show love. Yes, I think I shall have to sing too. And here, someone has cut some extra palm branches. Here's one for you and you. Oh, look, he is coming. The king is coming. Hosanna, we are singing. He is riding on a donkey. It is Jesus. We are children. We are mothers. We are fathers. We are singing to the one who comes in the name of the Lord. Told a story about a lost sheep. If the sheep could have talked, these are some of the things he might have said. I do not lift my head high on a graceful neck like the deer. My head is heavy, for it is covered with soft, curly, fleecy wool. I am a sheep. Heavy, heavy is my head, and it stays very close to the ground, eating, eating. Sometimes I eat all the way down to where there is rushing water. I back away in fright, for my wool makes me heavy, and I know that I can never learn to swim. Someone will lead me to where the water is not so deep. He knows my name, and he will lead me. I will cut my face as I am eating, for sometimes there are thorns among the grass. The shepherd will lift my head and look at me. When I am cut, he will put oil on the sore, and it will become well. When it is time for sleep, when it becomes dark, and I am tired, he will take me to the fold, which is my resting place. All about me there will be warm, heavy, full, woolly bodies. There are 100 sheep, and I am one of them. I have looked up from my eating. While I have been telling you about myself, it seems the other sheep have gone away and left me. They were here. I'm sure of it. They have gone. He has taken them with him. Every bush looks just like every other bush. There is no path for me to follow. But he knows my name. Perhaps he will come and find me and take me to the fold. Jesus told some people about the lost sheep, and he said, of course the shepherd will go out into the wilderness, leaving the 99 sheep who are safe, and looking for the one who is lost. And when he has found him, he will lay him on his shoulder. He knows such happiness when he has found his lost sheep that he calls together his friends and his neighbors and says, "Rejoice with me, for I have found my sheep which was lost." Everyone knows you cannot drink a splash. The splash goes away onto your cheek or dress or shirt, away in the air, and on the floor or ground, or back deep down into the water from whence it came. The splash goes away. But there is something about a splash. A splash is like laughter that starts way down in your toes and slowly bubbles into your throat and out and away. Splash some. Laugh some. There is plenty. There is enough. For 3 years, there was no rain upon the earth. No splashes. Not enough water. The trees that grew by the brook moaned and sighed and creaked and cracked and died and whitened in the sun. The sun sat alone in the sky, without a puffy white cloud floating by, without a cooling off, without a rain. Through the crackling heat that knew no sound of a splash or even of laughter, there came a voice speaking to Elijah. "I, the Lord your God, will send rain upon the earth." The sound of a bubbling, rushing, pushing, gathering of pitter-patters, the sound of the rushing of rain came to Elijah. The sight of a cloud to comfort the lonely, weary old sun. A bubbling cloud that was small but full of splashes came into the dry sky. And in a little while, the heavens grew black with clouds and wind, and there was a great rain. Once again, there was enough upon the earth to make some splashes and a bubbling sound of laughter. With God, there is always plenty. God giveth rain. He was thirsty and dusty. His sandals were gritty, and Jesus' robe was heavy with the dirt of the road. He had clacked his tongue in dryness as he sat beside the well, for he was full, and there was no one with whom to share his Father's love. And then she came. She brought a coolness, even though the day was hot. She was empty. She was light. She was carrying a jar which she planned to fill with water from the well. He said, "Give me a drink." Said she, "We two are strangers." But her eyes could not leave his, for he was full, and she was empty. She was hungry. And he told her of God. Jesus said, "God is spirit. He is here. He is not ever far away. Go home, and as you go, you will not lose him. He travels on the road. He sits with you at table. God is spirit. God is very near." She ran into the city to the people that she knew. It is true, she had left Jesus sitting by the well, but the love of God she had carried with her. For God is spirit. slow, slow, like a crawling snail, with his own heavy house on his curled up back. Slowly she came, with her curled up back, her back bent over, her face close to the ground. If you had seen her that Sabbath day and had not known her name, you might have called, "May I help you find whatever it is you have lost?" And in pain and chagrin, you'd have backed away, hand to your mouth, wanting to take back the words you had said, for her back was bent like a curled-up snail, and she could not lift her eyes to see the singing, flying things up high. Therefore she searched the constant, cautious ground. "Woman," he called. "Woman." And she knew that he knew her name. "Woman," he called, "you are freed." Her eyes raised from off the ground. And the man who called, the calling man, laid his hands on her. He knew her name. He called to her. He touched her. And she became well. Slowly, she pulled her crooked, long bent back up so that she could look him straight in the eye. The hardness of gold brightened in the last rays of the evening sun. The rich smell of frankincense mixed with the light fragrance of creamy myrrh and hung like a curtain in the dampness of the twilight hour. The darkness came inside, and it was night in the home of Joseph, Mary, and Jesus. The room seemed full of the echoes of the voices of kings who had come to see Jesus, but who had now gone away. Joseph did not know when the memory of their voices left him and gave way to a dream, a strange, fantastic, almost unbelievable dream. An angel said, "Rise, take the child and his mother and flee to Egypt." To Joseph, it seemed as if the angel might not have left the dark shadows of the room, for as he lighted a candle and prepared to leave, it was as if God himself were saying, go, Joseph, take the child to Egypt. Go, Joseph, go. Take his mother Mary. Take them to Egypt. Go, Joseph, go. The warm breath of the donkey on which Mary rode as she carried the sleeping baby. The square flat-roofed houses whose windows would appear in tomorrow's sunlight. And the colorless outlines of trees seemed to be a part of Joseph's dream. For it was dark, and an angel had said, "Go." The wind flapped the hairs of the horse's mane, and it whipped the dust in the road. It dried the lips, the moving lips of the man who bounced, who swayed and bounced as he held a scroll in his hand. Round and round the wheels went turning. Deeper and deeper went the wrinkles into the forehead of the man who read, who rode and read and thought, and did not understand the scroll he held in his hand. Softly, silently, flying, speaking, an angel of the Lord said to Philip, "Get up and go, rise and go to a road where wheels are turning. A man is reading a Bible scroll which he does not understand." On the desert road, the man saw Philip coming. "Do you know? Can you tell me about whom I am reading?" asked the man. Philip stopped and climbed inside the two-wheeled chariot. Then he told the man about his very best friend. How it told in the Bible scroll that he came a little baby, that he grew to be a man, that he loved the little children, that he talked of God's good plan. "What is his name?" "It's a singing name. It rides on the wings of the wind. It's a name of love, riding and walking and running love. It's a name to tell. It's Jesus."
Thank you. Watch to Jerusalem, Jesus did come.